Welcome back. I'm sorry that you have been subjected to a cold weather. Kodwa ke thina, we are much better than labantu abahlala kwi-informal segment. Those were corrugated iron shirts. And some of them don't even have blankets. So, we are lucky, really, because we have many options. We have different shelter, we have blankets, we even have electrical blankets and hot water bottles. So when you then think of the fact that we would still feel cold, it's worth to those people. It also means that we have to do our best to advocate on their behalf. We welcome the representatives of the department, the champion, for public transport, and the champion for infrastructure. I don't know whether I'm going to clash with one of them because they seem to belong to two different schools of thought. Mina, I belong to the winning club, and one of them belongs to the losing club, in case I choose, and he pirates me. We have let us start by acknowledging that the department has sent senior officials who are at the level of DDG, and the reason we are acknowledging that is that this is a follow-up meeting which came as a result of the gaps that the portfolio committee had identified during the first the presentation that was presented by a not-so-senior team that was from the department. That doesn't mean that we were not happy with them coming to make a presentation to us. But what we are noting is the seriousness of the department. When we have said to the department, go and improve, and then in the follow-up meeting, they sent senior officials. It shows that they take the portfolio committee very seriously, and we want to make note of that and acknowledge that. It shows that we respect each other. And also in our approach, we have always said that we don't see ourselves as us and them, the committee on one side and the department on the other side. The approach that we have adopted in this portfolio committee is that we work as a collective. Yes, we will always hold you accountable, but we are also here to facilitate a situation where the department responds to the needs of the public that we represent, and also to ensure that the department puts into place programs that are speaking to the priorities of the government in terms of service delivery. And one of those priorities is to ensure that there is job creation in South Africa. And the gap that we had then identified during the last presentation was that there was no clear indication in the presentation on how skills were going to be developed, and also how the department was creating a balance between the infrastructure development and the community development aspect of service delivery, which then would result with a sustainable development approach, which is in line with a developmental stage which South Africa is. So we then said, go and make improvements so that we can begin to talk to those things. And also we highlighted that we would want to see more approach that seeks to develop a transportation industry within the country, which is what will then lead to the new growth path, and also ensuring that there is beneficiation for the resources that the natural resources of the country. And we are hoping that this presentation will speak to those. We would now welcome the department to present to us what they have prepared. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Mathabatha Mokonyane. I'm responsible for public transport in the department, and I also support the winning team. I'm with the advocate James Mlau, who's responsible for roads in the department. Honorable Chair, we basically are the advanced team at like you said, at this level. We will be joined shortly. I'm told the colleagues have just landed by the technical support team, but we are more capable of dealing with the issues. In terms of what was requested of us, this is a fairly big presentation, 96 slides in total. In terms of our own presentations, I don't think that we'll go beyond 20. The majority of the information, more especially progress, it's for information. But we thought that it is useful that we include it. The presentation is broken into, in the main, three parts. It is the broad, high-level skills development plan or strategy of the department in an integrated fashion, which I will deal with. And then we'll get to the major job creation drivers within the sector in general, and but particularly in the department. We will then spend some time on Saba Songe program, Shova Galula bicycle program, and the rail rolling stock acquisition program, because they are the ones that talk more to job creation and have a very close relationship onto the provisions of the new growth path. And then we'll then spend a little bit of time on other job creation initiatives that are not major or main. They are big, but not necessarily the immediate focal points. And then we will conclude. Having said that, Chairperson, I will then quickly go to the first part of the presentation. Or just before that, just to indicate that the purpose is to provide an overview of the skills development and job creation as it responds to the new growth path, provide interventions in terms of initiatives to address the skills, but also to report on major transport the job creation initiatives. As I have indicated, this is a very busy slide, but fairly simple. It does indicate the integrated fashion in which we then tackle the issue of scarce skills in the department and how we plan to deal with those. At the top end is what drives us in terms of our mandate, vision, and really objectives of the transport sector in general, but also the department in particular. We would love to have an improved public transport system, and basically that is secure, safe, and efficient, affordable, reliable, and accessible. And that would also lead to an efficient and responsive infrastructure and mobility. We drive those, or we strive to attain the vision and objectives through how we are structured in the department, mainly mode specific, which is road, rail, air, and maritime. And in between, in order for us to achieve all of this, you would therefore need to address the issue around skills, identify the needs, and also then provide a plan to deal with the needs. And coupled with that are your transversal overarching plans, that of integration, insofar as planning is concerned, project management and implementation of those projects. But we have added also public transport because it also cuts across the different modes, more especially in terms of land public transport. The first two, and then you have got air passenger transport and maritime passenger. The concentration, the focal point of the department is mainly here, because when you come here, the industry is more capable of taking care of this land. And thereafter, your outputs or your outcomes should basically be all of those issues that you would have identified. And then the integrated development of our skills would result in job creation. We basically would use education, training, and skills development, the TITAs and the centers of excellence, or universities and technicals, FETs. And then we don't also have programs like internship and learnership, where basically mentoring and coaches play a key role. But also across the value chain, if you are to enhance and refresh the skills, you have to have constant monitoring and coaching. And as I have indicated, capacity building initiatives in all of those areas. The other, more, less formal type of training than the FET and universities would be than your conferences, workshops, and seminars. In terms of critical skills that we've identified in as part of this exercise in the department, in the road space, you basically would need engineers, artisans, apprentices, road maintenance officers, planners and designers, road traffic management, and vehicle inspectors and traffic officers. So it's both infrastructure and the road safety space. In the rail sector, again, still engineers and rail infrastructure developers, and also economists and logistics personnel, but also rail safety personnel, inspectors, monitors, and yardmasters. In the aviation or air transport area, it's pilots, aircraft maintenance engineers, air traffic controllers, air traffic safety and security experts, and then transport managers, and then airports focused or infrastructure related issues and compliance managers. Maritime skills, again, identified, all of these are identified. There may not necessarily be all of them skills, but these are identified in the spaces. You've got them pilots or captains, and then seafarers and ship designers, skippers, maritime safety officers, environmental experts, marine engineers, port engineers, and then compliance officers. Our approach in terms of tackling the skills is very holistic. As we are informed by policy making and regulations and integrated training in the spaces, you then identify skills, management, all of those skills, and then you provide mechanisms in terms of coaching, mentoring, learnership, internships, and also bursaries for formal schooling, scholarships, closely associated with bursaries. And then there is also an initiative to tap onto retired professionals in terms of the skills, mainly in the engineering sector. This is more in line with the, as we talk to the rail rolling stock, we'll elaborate on the need for this, because I think the Transnet is at the forefront of having to get all of this, to go and acquire the skills from retired personnel. And then all of this in an integrated and coordinated skills development. I must say, because of time, we cut a number of things where we had shown how we collaborate with the CITAS and TETA in particular, but also how we support the centers of excellence. This is just what I had explained in the previous slide in terms of the holistic approach towards this skills development strategy. The interventions in the skills development, the rest of the presentation will deal with the in the job creation space. But in terms of skills development, we have got skills coordinating bodies, but we don't have it for each mode. We still have the Department of Transport leading the provinces and the agencies in terms of identification of skills, but also identification of opportunities wherein the skills can be catered for or addressed. And then we've got 13 universities that we collaborate with in the form of a Centers of Development Program. We have got students that we sponsor or provide bursaries and scholarships in these areas, engineering, transport economics, freight logistics, maritime studies, transport management, and transport planning. Now, if we identify students based on the field that they will choose, we then are able to contact and talk to the centers which provide those types of training. And then we've got the transport of science activity center that supports learners and educators at the high school on math, science, and technology, and then in the form of the three mobile laboratories. Further, in terms of interventions, we also occupy our space in the curriculum development for FET colleges in the area of transport management and transport economics. Educational outreach programs in the form of awareness campaigns where we go and sell our services, accompanied by agencies, tell them what is it that we can offer as the transport sector, and then invite applicants in the spaces. And then we've got learnerships and internships. We've got quite a number in the department of just advertised 30 more, both for DOT and the agencies. We are also in the position to, we're also aiming to support all district municipalities by placing two interns in the transport management, transport economics, and transport planning in order to capacitate the municipalities. What we have identified is that part of what not appropriately implementing our policies and legislation is the scare, is the lack of capacity within those municipalities. So we have just concluded an agreement with the municipalities. They are all very keen to accept this intent. And then the utilization of retired professionals have spoken about it. CAED is the DPSA initiative for managers. It's a program for managers in governance and related issues. Honorable Chairperson, as I have indicated, that is the skills development plan, a high level, of course. But as we get into the specifics, mainly in terms of job creation initiatives, I will then hand over to my colleague, Advocate James Mlau, to deal with the Samba Songe Roads Maintenance Program. I will then take the last two, which is Shobagalula and the rail rolling stock. Thank you very much.
Before you can continue, we welcome the technical support team. We accepted your apology. We heard that you were landing. You were just landing. Thank you.
Madam Chair, honorable members, morning. I had hoped that honorable chair will not raise the matter of the winning team this morning, but I will not dwell on it, only to point out that this weekend Chiefs did win. I was hoping to work off the hard copy members, but I think it might assist just to confirm what my colleague has earlier said, that a lot of detailed information that we've put here is really information I think honourable members have previously had sight of, but we're putting it here really for detail and to give a sense to the response of what our brief is at this meeting. And so I will not dwell on a lot of slides. I'll really just touch brief on them. On the hard copy, then, on page 8, we sort of come with this old slide where there is a simple case being made about the correlation between our country investment on infrastructure and economic return. So I don't think that one is a matter of common cause. And on the next slide, on the next page, you begin to see a trend of how our country has invested or underinvested in our infrastructure. I think this point gets made whenever there are debates on transport and infrastructure, that much as we are trying to deal with road maintenance, we are in fact coming off a low base where historically we've underinvested in our infrastructure. I think we then just go through the simple slides that indicate if you just want to see the red flag there. A simple point out of that slide that we like to pick up is that a large section, which is the red, of our provincial road network is actually very poor. And I think that's really background information which informs. And the second point I think that can be made on the next slide is that the totality of the information we have on our road network at various levels declines as you go at different levels. You have almost 100% information on your primary road network. It declines to 82% when you go to provinces. It gets even lower when you look at the metros, but it's worse when you look at the balance of your number of municipalities. This is, of course, an issue that the department we are now trying to deal with in our new road plans to make sure that the information we have and the information that is collected in the provinces is up to date and collected on the available technological tools so that there's no gap. We then, I think, on the next few slides, really just again go through some of the slides which I think we've previously seen, really to demonstrate what is the net present requirement if you had to quickly bring our network maintenance up to date. I just must point out that those figures, in fact, are quite low now. You'd recall, I think these are dated 2009, but they do give an indication of what it is that you would need to pump into a road network if you were to try and bring up-to-date road maintenance just on the gravel and the paved road network. We then try and focus next on a trend which I think we've previously discussed here of what really has been the provincial trend on using own equitable shares on maintenance. I think that figure of generally across the board, average 40% has been known, and that is a sector then through MinMet, a decision was taken that we need to introduce a program in which we respond and invest in a particular way, focusing on the secondary road network, which is then where Samba Songe comes in. I'm then going to skip these slides, which really talk to the principles of Samba Songe, because I think we've covered those in detail previously, and so I would not like to hold the meeting up on those ones. I think what's important is probably just to quickly go to my slide 32 with your commission members, because I'm wishing that we can just talk to the target here. In direct response now, I mean, we know that across the provinces, $6.4 billion has been allocated on this program, which is attempting to respond to the challenges of our network. We have said that the total business plans in the provinces indicate that we'll make a job target this year of some 155,000 job opportunities. You then, of course, have to convert those so that they are full-time equivalents. So we're looking at some just under 70,000 jobs to be created from this year. It's then, I think, important that we try and sort of zoom in on the performance information that we've collated for the first quarter of this year against the target. Just important that the first thing is that against the allocation of $6.4 billion, there is obviously a transfer schedule that gets agreed between the department, the provincial roads authorities, and Treasury. And the first grant transfer was effected, totaling $1.4 billion. This is not just a simple state line division. Provinces have to indicate what their own program schedulings are and therefore how they're going to, on a quarterly basis, draw down on the total allocation for the province. And so that's what the total was. Spend to date, and that spend to date actually means at the end of June. The entire process of confirming and validating information that provinces have to do takes them roughly about a month. So as of the close of July, but the performance you had 872 spent. Of that, 57,000 opportunities were created. So that's the kind of information. And you see that there are particular provinces where we obviously have challenges. You would see that in this information, we don't have any figures for Gauteng, either against the opportunities, the expenditure, and let alone the conversion, and also with regard to the Western Cape. There is information that we are not given. The same is true of Mpumalanga. These, I would hope, are simply teething problems around collection of information that we're going to get as a province, but it does give you a sense of what it is that is beginning to emerge around the implementation of Sambasonke in the province. The question then that we try and answer quickly is, what is it that as national we would have wanted to put in place to actually oversee this program? In other words, in order to respond to the question of what really is the national department going to do to oversee, to make sure that what was planned is in fact achieved. Just a quick slide then. Our sense was that National Department of Transport will put in place a program management unit, a PMU, which would work not so much on its own, but would work with the provinces in order to make sure that the methodology that was earlier listed as relating to how Sambasonke would be implemented would in fact be consistent. This is because provinces don't necessarily have the same capacity technically, the same HR expertise in terms of how to implement this program such that you meet the objectives of the program. So we then wanted at a national level to have this PMU, and as national, I think I must indicate, we wrote to Treasury requesting that at least a portion of the grant be allowed for this kind of PMU. At this stage, Treasury didn't really favor that. So what we've had to do as NDOT is to marshal resources within the department who are still putting this unit in place in order to oversee. But what it does mean is that the implementation has in fact started without this unit being in place. In those four pillars that we show on that slide, we really simply try and indicate what are the key things that we would be wanting to be covered by the PMU. The first is that you try and make sure that there are maximum efficiencies being achieved with budgets. There is a sense, I mean, if you look at some Treasury reviews, they will suggest that much as you are increasing road budgets and road maintenance budgets, you're not necessarily getting the correlative efficiencies in our province. And so we think that's the first thing that the PMU is going to do. The second one is that you want to roll out, and you would recall that the President has committed our department to rolling out a number of best practice programs. We put it as part of the principle here, but we say what you would then do at a national level is to assist provinces where probably that experiment has never been taken forward, whether you're looking at Northern Cape or Northwest. Other provinces have tried this, the Eastern Cape, you know, Mpumalanga has Ndela and so on. But what you want to do is to clean up those best practices such that they are cost efficient where they've been tried. The third leg is to try and ensure that there's some integration on the network at the level of planning. You'd recall that this grant itself does commit us to using an asset management tool in planning going forward, particularly from 2013 and 2014, that condition in the grant becomes imperative. So we have to make sure that the prioritization of our project across provinces and across the network actually talks to a higher objective of economic service of the network and the economic objective of the network. The last one is, I think, a point which has been made. If you look at the Planning Commission's report, the issue, I think, that's central is if we're going to achieve development, we need to institutionalize the participation of our people in how we plan and implement projects. So what we would have thought we want to do with the PMU are really those key things. And at the moment, we are then finalizing that. The given is that in the provinces, the monitoring that has the presence of national at the moment is very scanty, because what we've had to do is to deploy our officials, who are very few at national, to sit with provinces to see how this is going, when ideally a more clearly funded technical capacity would have assisted that process to make a turnaround quicker. Maybe the one point which I think should be made, because one of the questions I think has been raised is, why is it that when you look at, I'm going to go to the provincial picture now, which I'm really not going to dwell, it's for the members to pick up any of the provinces they're interested in, but one of the questions that does get raised is, why is it that provinces seem to have differing focuses on their business plans for Sambasonga for this year? I think it's very important to point this out. One of the conditions of this grant that had to be agreed to was that we would, as NDOT, in the business planning process of provinces, allow them, in instances where they had already committed. Now, remember, this PRMG is, in fact, a dedicated conditional grant which is made of previous components. So there used to be a grant that used to go to provinces, which was called the PIG, Provincial Infrastructure Grant. So provinces would have planned for that in the outer year, and if you recall, it was quite an open-ended grant, which means by the time we hit March of this present financial year, or rather the previous financial year, we would have had plans and even contractual commitments which would have been driven by whatever the priorities of the various provinces there. Some would have focused on maintenance, some would have focused on CAPEX, in fact. So to a point, we're restricted. So that's why you would find those anomalies when you look at this. Our hope, of course, would be that going forward in the MTEF, we would be able to sway those around using the PMU tool and working with provinces to respond more to the priorities and the objectives as set by Sambasonga. I think then, members here, really, I will not talk to detail, save to say what we do here is go province by province and highlight, and you would recall that for the first time in DORA now, we are required to publish all the projects that will be constructed by each province. And so it's easier then to monitor whether the province is sticking to that list. Or something else is happening, and in fact, there's a recall mechanism then is put in place in terms of that. I think really in terms of the various focuses of these projects, as I say, they differ from province to province. I will not dwell on them, members. I would really like to really run through those chairperson, and I think it would be correct to just say we can hand back to you, Chair, at this stage. All of these are just highlights for provincial programs as they attempt to respond to the thrust of the program. Chair, thank you very much.
While they're stopping, since I just wanted to congratulate the Chamber of Security. At last, it has won again. And also to remind people that Orlando Pirates has actually won all, not just one.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Where I come from, there was one club called Mahuli Ringvale Rovers, and one of my favorite songs was that Nomasia for City Hello. And then Mina get to hello rovers. Chairperson, I will then go to Shobagalula bicycle project. But the information around Eastern Cape was still being collated, and then at the time we had to send this to Grand and them to make copies. It was not yet finalized. We will submit it separately in the next few days.
We had only money spent because that you can locate from the records. In terms of projects, they've done a lot of work, but they were, in fact, they were the very first, the second project to launch Samba Soccer. I think information around that will come in the next few days. We accelerate and move to slide 71, which is the Shobhagalula information. Chairperson, after the April meeting, when the committee raised a number of issues in terms of concrete information, supported by statistics and timelines, we then quickly commissioned a study, feasibility study for the bicycle manufacturing plant. That study has now been concluded, so we are happy to then report on it and in terms of the what it can do for job creation. Unfortunately, in contrast to the Samba Soccer program, these are proposals or plans. But once adopted and then implemented, the target can be realized. In terms of the feasibility study itself, and whether it was going to be feasible to then establish manufacturing capacity in the country, we had to do demand estimation and then use some of the tools and sources, mainly the household survey, and then deal with them with one the need, but also then the supply based on a number of things, light industry availability, and so on and so on. And then this map just shows and indicates some of the poverty projects. I think. In terms of all other information or data that is available, they talk the same language in terms of the some of the poverty pockets and where the plant could then the need for bicycles could then be established. And then the result of that exercise was that the propensity to buy a bicycle, 55% in rural and 55% in urban. Obviously, this is the household that can afford bicycles, but if assisted by the state, they can go up a little bit. And then bicycle ownership per household, 1.36 in rural and 1.35. This is higher in rural because of obviously captive market or dependence on bicycles other than in the urban areas, but the difference is minimal. And then in terms of our own projections, the market size over 10 years we could cover 9.5 million people or supply 9.5 million bicycles if we were to accelerate this program and assist almost the people that are in need of this bicycle. Within this figure, there is about 14 million learners, but obviously at different ages. So this is a mixture of both the young and old. And then therefore the need then becomes 162 bicycles that can be produced per year. So that is on the demand side, not necessarily on the supply side. At the end of this period, you would have obviously supplied about 1.6 million bicycles and have reached 9.5 people. And then therefore, what then this translates to is that monthly you need to then have produced a minimum of 13,500 bicycles. So these figures are the ones that tell you whether it is feasible to establish a manufacturing plant
And if this were to be the target, how big is supposed to be your plant? How many should the plants be? Not necessarily where they need to be located. What, in terms of location, this is the map that was used to identify that. Okay. This is just an industry that is status quo in the country, in that we don't have manufacturing capacity in the country, but almost everything is imported. What we are able to do is to assemble. What we can possibly manufacture going forward are frames, handlebars, seat posts, and so on. And then, therefore, before this can happen, you can even have a capacity for an assembly plant and distribution channel. Then, what the study then indicated is that it is feasible and possible to manufacture everything in the country except for the tire chains and bolts. Again, also this one, if raw materials can be sourced and be obtained cheaper, they can be manufactured. They can still be manufactured in the country. The concept of the model that we were then investigated and then found to be feasible was a three assembly plant model. Possibly one in KZN, one in the Eastern Cape, and one in the Gauteng. This was not like chosen arbitrarily, it was based on a number of elements, one of them being proximity to the ports in terms of imported parts, and then ease of distribution across the country. But these two, because of the proximity to the port, and then ease of distribution towards the whole country. And then the capacity, and also here, the logistics possibilities and the industry capability. There's more industrial space to even to rent in this area than in the other area. But in terms of the number of bicycles that they can then produce per month, 4.5 cases and 3,000 and 6,000 in Gauteng, all of this coming to that required number of 13,500. And those are just the spaces for facilities. This is not how spaces land and buildings. I've indicated availability of industrial space and land and cost in terms of rental and access to basic services and infrastructure and proximity to labor for the determination of this country. The cost and option analysis was done twofold. If the industries were to be built from scratch, meaning owning building and everything else, the cost would be 40 million for all three. The rental option would be only 3.3 million. So there's a vast difference of owning and renting. And the determination from government side, because of the subsidy portion, is that if you were to get, like, say, private investors, or even if you were to introduce them cooperatives or some form of scheme, this option is much better, but you don't get to own the building, the immovable asset. This one you would own is more sustainable, and then the majority of the capex costs are the initial cost of land and building. Thereafter, in terms of operational costs, is even much cheaper than this one, because here the rent portion will always have to be factored in. Okay. I wouldn't want to bore the committee in terms of the internal rate of returns and NPVs, but it just shows that a 10% increase, I mean, in terms of the different model, PPP and a private, there's quite a vast difference cost to government. If it was to be private, 24, and then PPP is 37.9. This one also I would want to skip, but then get to what can that be manufactured locally? With all of this here, in terms of bicycle parts and, bicycle parts, and then those are the ones that I've indicated, tires and balls and things, that can still be imported, but these are smaller components. Obviously, very key, because the bicycle cannot move without tires. Again, local manufacturing, both OPEX and CAPEX, is between 35 and 53, and the difference is between rental and owning the immovable assets. This is just to concretize that in terms of the real demand, is that 162 per month over 10 years, and it translates to 1.6 million bicycles that can be produced. So what we are saying here is that there is demand for bicycles in the country, and you can actually even go to above 1.6 over 10 years and increase capacity. But basically, it would mean your related costs would have to go higher, because you then need more space and then more in terms of labor and related issues. I would want to come to the issues around jobs. The assembly plants, those three plants in total, can produce up to 280 jobs, 200 of which are unskilled labor. So the majority here are your laborers and general assistants and cleaners and so on. The 80 are the specialized skills or semi-specialized fitters and trainers and engineers and quality assurance. And then the manufacturing processes, up to 73 jobs that can be created. That then concludes my story around Shobhakalola. Chair, the long and short of it is that this is feasible. It can be done. Even where you really start from scratch and establish a building, land, acquire land and building. At 40 million compared to the benefits, this is still very, very minimal. It is the cost to manufacture one vehicle is between 710 and 750 rand per bicycle. Obviously, a markup price of some 10% or so, it will still be affordable compared to the type of vehicles that we import now, which are basically, in terms of this study, are your what you call bicycle A, not the highest quality, but we're paying anything between 600 and 1.3. A bicycle. So at a cost of 710, and also to make sure that the a plant survives at the marked up price, it is still very much affordable. That is the story around Shobhakalola. I'm sure the study can make us a real business case. What we need to establish is whether government can own and run a plant, or you would want to go PPP, or you would want to invite purely private, and then government comes in only in terms of subsidizing the final product. Those are the final details that we can deal with, but it is looking very good. Unlike other sectors that would want to go the localization plan or route, This is the one that is much cheaper to establish. And like I indicated, the figures are indicating that it is feasible. I would therefore then want to go to the last but one of the presentations, which is the rail rolling stock. And again, I'll concentrate on the issues that relate to job creation. This program has been approved by the PRASA board. The department is supporting it. Treasury and the department and PRASA have completed the feasibility study. And then it also looks very positive. It, however, requires them a huge injection, up to 123 billion, up to 2025 of the program, the whole program, 10-year program. The new fleet requirements in terms of the studies undertaken, 724. And then if you were to procure 360 coaches per year, it has to be over a 10-year period. And the NPV is 100 billion, but obviously factor in fluctuations and interest. It is around 123 over a 20-year period. It would create plus minus 65,000 direct and indirect jobs. And then, just this indicates 65% of the 100 billion can be manufactured internally. That is again 65% of OPEX and CAPEX expenditure can be local content, can be spent locally or reinvested locally. And then 65,992,000 employment opportunities over the project life cycle of 20 years, 13,000 being created during the OPEX of operational cost, and then the CAPEX for physical infrastructure, 52,766. I must say that I've mentioned the department, Treasury and Plaza, but also Transnet, because of the plan to use a revamped Transvac in terms of local manufacturing or assembly. It's very, very key, and they have been party to the discussion. Job creation projections, both CAPEX and OPEX, this is the 65,000 total employment, direct jobs 27,800, indirect 20,784, and induced value add and add-ons 17,316. Categorized in terms of skilled and unskilled, 5,000 high skilled professionals, engineers, architects, designers, mechanical engineers, and so on. Skilled again, artisans and fitters and turners, 21,214. Unskilled laborers, general assistants, 24,563. And informers, 40,749. These are where you get your one-offs like packaging and packing and supply of packing materials. I'm not so sure if it also involves the workers who sell food there next to the plant, but those are the categories that we term informal. The OPEX, the operational expenditure that I've spoken about, which is 13,226 in this area, wholesale and retail trade sector, business services, community, social, and personnel services. Personnel, not personal. And then that is just the graph to indicate the, again, the OPEX area. Ranges from beverages and tobacco to storage facilities, food, communication, HR, marketing, paper and paper products, packaging, and so on. And then the CAPEX, the 52,776 is in electricity or electrical, from electrical and electricity, including up to catering and accommodation services. That then concludes all the Praza stroke DOT rail rolling stock acquisition program. Again, this one, the work has been done up to feasibility. It is feasible. It was announced by the minister. It is being supported across the board. We are now going to cabinet for a final sign-off to start the acquisition program. However, the first, if we start now, everything in terms of acquiring the rolling stock, the very first vehicle can only be delivered around 2014. Towards the end, Chairperson, as we conclude, we've just flagged some of the information we have gotten from our agencies in terms of the jobs that they can create and the projects. The housing improvement project, 20,000 jobs. This is the notorious housing freeway improvement scheme. Some of the jobs have already been created during construction. The balance of the jobs are going to be during the administration and management, mainly in the collection and ticketing, and the cart manufacturing of the gadgets that are going to be allowed on the countries. The wireless projects, all the feasibility has been done, 6,000 jobs. It's also based on a PPP arrangement that obviously based on the resolutions of the matters on the GFIP would also have to be looked at quite closely, because the model was also tolling a model. CBRTA, these are just the inspectors on our roads. SAMHSA, there is 36 cadets in small vessels that are being trained by and funded by TITA. And then we also have quite a number of maritime students at our centers of excellence. These are just a repetition of the figures that were mentioned, but I think this the members can ignore, because we now have a progress report in terms of what has already been created in terms of the number of jobs based on the Sambasoke projects. Chairperson, in conclusion, we would like the committee to note the presentation and to note the plan generally on skills development, but also support the initiatives that we are inviting on, in particular the Sambasoke, Shobogalula, and the rail rolling stock programs, which are major job creation drivers in the department. And then note the progress made in the implementation of, in particular, Sambasoke, on what the provinces are already reporting as a progress in this space. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That then concludes the presentation from the department.
Continue in about 15 minutes time. We are going to have a 15 minutes.
run a marathon.
I did check it there, but I couldn't find it in the office. This is really going to request from Parliament to give it in there.
Yeah. Ah. Okay. We don't know about Honorable Robert. No. I want to say the name doesn't sound new.
Thank you. There are members that other meetings, and that is the Honorable Faro and Honorable Zagut. So I would give them an opportunity first so that by the time they need to leave for their meetings, they have made their contributions. Honorable Zagut.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank both presentations by the department. It shows a great improvement. But I've got, Chairperson, I've got my reservations on some of the issues. Like on the slide where it talks about the job creations and skills development, especially the skills development part of it, the intervention. A lot has been mentioned that you have partnership with 13 universities. My question on this regard is, do you have a program to attract those young, to attract the youth or to make them aware of these courses offered by the different institute of higher learning? Then how do you advertise? Do you have maybe a career guidance, a program, and who are your targets? You also mentioned that you have a mobile laboratory. My question on this one is, are these mobile laboratories also targeting learners from the rural, deep rural areas? Because we know that we still have schools where there are no laboratories. So my other question is, with the Sihamba Sonke, program. We've been in the Northwest province. It seems they do not understand the Sihamba Sonke because they use that grant to pay their previous debt. We were shocked to hear that. Then with the Shovagalula, I'm interested in the manufacturing plant, or the manufacturing plants to the provinces. I don't have a problem with KZN and Eastern Cape, but I have a problem with Gauteng, because it seems as if we are following that apartheid pattern that everything happened in Gauteng. We have provinces. We have provinces which are also next to the border of our neighboring countries. If this manufacturing plant, one can be in those provinces, the rural provinces, my belief is that by having this manufacturing plant, we'll create job opportunities for our people. That will minimize their movement from one place to another. Given the fact that we have this high rate of HIV and AIDS, so we don't want to separate families so that they can be tempted somewhere and do something that will kill our nation. So with our neighboring countries, we can also be able to supply those neighboring countries. Like we have our Mozambique, we have Swaziland, which are very rural, and those people need something for transport. So the bicycle will also assist in those areas. So why also am I saying target other rural province? We like Mpumalanga. I'm not talking about Mpumalanga Chairperson just because I'm from Mpumalanga. Yeah. I know that our Mpumalanga is very vast. We have many farms. Our kids on those farms walk long distances to school. So if we can target provinces like that, it will also assist in the establishment of new towns. Because we cannot only follow the apartheid system that everything happens in Gauteng. Chairperson, I thank you. Honorable
Farrell. I want to take another angle about, you know, putting money into provinces, and I think that one should start working on the basis of those that have got the least opportunity, I think. And I talk here about the Eastern Cape. I think we need to see those figures. You heard one of my colleagues here mention that we've been on a road tour, and I think, James, you presented to us the Shamba Zonke document through this portfolio committee, of which we have hard copies of. Unfortunately, I didn't bring it with me today, but I can assure you something. There is total confusion out there, total confusion. And I seem to think, judging from what you're now saying, that there has been a change of position. And if there is a change of position in terms of how that money should be used, then I think we need to be told, because otherwise it makes us to look like idiots out there. Let me tell you why. In that document that you presented to us, Advocate, that was very clearly defined as part of the key objectives, that the maintenance of roads, potholes, were going to be centered around municipalities, and I stress the word municipalities, and that those jobs that would be created would be done in those areas where that is needed. There was no mention of the fact that the provinces were going to take this money and use it for their own means, for provincial roads. Because my understanding is that there is an equitable share, there's these PIGs that come into provinces from grant financing, which cater for their own maintenance budget, just like SANRAL has their own budgets to cater for the national roads. It's the municipalities and metros where we have visually been and visited that are the people that have got the problem, because they do not have the capacity to have revenue streams out of the rate base in order them to be able to put that money into road maintenance. And we have seen excellent examples where job creation has been done in a very meaningful manner with skills transfers at Ugu, and I use that as a model, and yet you go to other places and there is nothing. Now, surely, if we are talking seriously about this document, which is what we've asked for, it's about jobs, jobs, jobs. And the where the jobs are going to be needed most are in those metros and those municipalities. Not big contracts that are going to be outsourced up at the top there at the different levels of national and provincial level. And I am very, very worried about the fact that this confusion there exists. You speak to authorities in the province where I come from, they say, their money, that money is mine. And they're using it for everything else but for what it was purposely put there for. The minister created that fund, put $22 billion into that special dedicated maintenance fund for the purpose of what we understood it to be. And here we see a different story now coming out of it. Unless those provinces are clearly told that there's a separation between the equitable share and there's a separation between those funds that are coming in from the Shamba Zonke, there's going to be this mix-up. Can the chairperson just relate? I wasn't at Northwest, but when I heard the story there, I was horrified. I think my colleague mentioned it. They went there, and to look at how much this money has been allocated, which is very clearly defined, and they'd spent that money already, before they even got it, to pay for arrears contracts which were suing them for non-payment. You know, gentlemen, please, man. I ask through you, Chair, that we get this sorted out for once and for all, that we determine exactly how this funding is going to work and how it is going to be accessed. We have a tremendous opportunity here to be able to create jobs, and municipalities are ready and willing to be part of that process if we can just make sure that the money is actually channeled to the right place. The other thing which is confusing, which it's mentioned in the presentation you made, is that we have two other budgets which are allocated in that program for roads. The one relates to the classification funding for municipalities and metros to apply to get their roads classified. Because I would have believed, and I understood it like that, that that would be the criteria for how funds would be prioritized. Because if someone comes and says, look, I've got 20 kilometers of road and 19 of them are shot, they finished, or in a bad condition. And next door here, another municipality comes and says, I've got 20 kilometers, but only 5 are in a bad condition. You'd be able to proportion that funding in accordance with the need. And that classification has to be completed across the country. I mean, as we talk, it changes. You know, we had rain in the Eastern Cape again, and a lot of the roads have been damaged. So it's literally, you know, something that one has to do on a daily basis. And I think that classification money needs to be determined as well. I think there's $33 million there. So that those provinces know that money is solely for that purpose. And the last funding, which I think needs to be separated out of this mix, is the extended public works program. Now, those monies are all allocated differently. But, you know, once they start doing this, we're going to lose contact with what, in fact, we're trying to achieve in this department, because it's all over the place. If I can just go on to the next item, that was just on that Shamba Zonke, which I think we need to sort out very clearly. On the Shola Kalula, Martin, in due respect, I think that the manufacturing part of it is not really the issue. It's not really the issue. 280 jobs is nothing as to what can be created out of the spin-off, let's call it that, of maintaining those bikes over the long period. I think this portfolio committee, I remember, went to Amsterdam about, was it 7 years ago or something, when the late Dula Omar was still minister. And we looked at a program which was bringing donated second-hand bicycles into this country by the container load. I would like to know And also that was linked to a maintenance program, whether that thing had been successful in a sense. And what the successes that, what we've learned from that, before we then put out bicycles into the, you know, into the whole country on the basis, I think what you say, of about the 750 rand a bike. And then we end up, you know, those things not being secured and not looked after or whatever, or not used, and I think it could be a shame. On the railway line side of things, there's no mention here of the opportunities which should have come out of the branch lines which are sitting idle in Moorabbin. And that link to its rural development component, I think, is one of the most crucial opportunities that we sit on in terms of moving goods and services and people around this country. And the fact is that we have already, or I don't know if they're still in existence, but certainly a number of them, existing plants that manufacture carriages in this country. There were 7 manufacturers in this country. So I think that, you know, to go into major capital programs when we already have infrastructure at our foot, like the Cartrain was manufactured and assembled here, and we have the framework for that thing to be to assemble more if necessary. So we need to look at that, and I don't see any reference to that. And then the last but not least is the whole aspect of the shipbuilding opportunities, which are not mentioned, and I think are something that we saw when we went on the last portfolio visit and oversight visit, which needs to be expanded upon. Those are just a few of my comments, Madam Chair. I would still be here available until 12 o'clock in case I need to be able to contribute something more, particularly about the green economy, which has not really been highlighted here, which is a very good opportunity for jobs as well.
Let us give the department an opportunity to respond.
Thanks, Chair. I think we can start with some of our cases.
This matter of the Northwest and the problems there. We got a report from the, firstly, the province itself has approached us just before the visit of the portfolio committee there, requesting that they be given a different dispensation in terms of how they use the fund. We indicated that this was not possible. The conditions of what this grant covers and what it can be used for are now an act of parliament, so we have no basis for giving any deviation. We had not really explained the details of the deviation, but it looked like they wanted to do the sorts of work that is more CAPEX rather than maintenance as defined. So, and the approach was not even formal, it wasn't in writing, we were approached by. There's also been a change of leadership there. But anyway, now since we then got this report from members after the visit, we have in fact scheduled a discussion which we think it's important to have Treasury in order to verify this, the provincial Treasury and national Treasury, to verify the truthfulness of saying the money has been used for purpose other than so that we then move forward. So I think it's a matter that we are following up. That would really would like to be clear about. That is the first thing. The second thing, I mean, there is a reason in those discussions that it would appear the province wants now to offer us new projects than those that have already been published, as I spoke about the publishing of the schedule of projects. So there's an ongoing engagement there, which I think, Chair, we just flag we're aware of, and I think we will need to report back on. But I don't think it is something that's going to be allowable that we willy-nilly move out of this. The other point which I think is important, just to flag, the Rural Transport Services Grant that Honourable Member Farrell refers to is additional and almost separate to what we were reporting here, so I didn't focus on it. And indeed, it is true. At this stage, it is focusing. It's 35 million for this year, 37 the following year, and it rises in the MTF. What is intended to assist us is targeting initially the 21 big but rural district municipalities that have the sanitation function among them. Now, the intention is to roll out an asset management system in those with a view that you will find a model that you will roll out across the country. So we are currently engaging with those municipalities. In fact, we have recently called a meeting with Treasury because in terms of the payment schedule, we were supposed to have transferred monies to them. And our concern at National was that there is a number of things missing. The template against which they are collecting condition information there, but also an asset management system hardware framework, if you like, against which they ought to be populating, because the same is going to be true of provinces. Come 2013, 2014, the prioritizing of these projects has to be done based on an asset management system. So just to assure members that, yes, this is also an item we're dealing with. I think we can give a detailed report on it on another occasion. The issue that Honourable Member Farrell raises in relation to what's happening out there in relation to this grant is an issue that really is of concern to us as well as NDOT as program manager. Look, it is called the Provincial Roads Maintenance Grant. And whenever we take you through the steps of our network, you'd realize that we're talking about provincial roads. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean we want whatever other roads that are in the provinces to be excluded. In fact, the business plans that we've got, and as it relates to the Eastern Cape, they've an ongoing platform there where municipalities are meeting with the province, and in fact, the MEC, I mean, I've visited some of these meetings district by district, and it's where they funnel these projects that then inform the business plan. But the truth is that this is not a uniform exercise across the country. In some provinces, like we came here to consult the Western Cape, we found that there was a standoff between the province and its own municipalities as to what this money should be used to prioritize. Now, I think the trouble for us as national is that it was put in as a condition, and we had ongoing discussions with Treasury around this issue, that we need to create a clear cutoff on what this money is for. The point I raised in the presentation that there is a condition in the framework that says you will inherit certain projects in respect of which there already were commitments has created a bit of a confusion. And it's almost impossible now for transport. I mean, it became clear in the business planning stage that if we were saying to provinces, go back to the drawing board on these projects here, there was going to be a problem, because the bigger risk was that you would sit with unapproved business plan, the financial aid had started, you were going to understand the grant, what then happened. So I agree, honorable members, that the biggest thing we need to be clear about going forward is the articulation of what this money is set aside for. Not so much at a network level. In other words, is this a provincial road? It's clear about national roads, but is this a P road or an S road or a D road? I think what is clear is that the planning framework, province to province, sometimes puts both of these roads in the plan. But that is what we're referring to generically as a secondary road network. Okay? I think that Member Farrell is quite correct, and we would need to get this clear. If you look at the business plans that I highlighted here, it's clear that some provinces are using this grant to shadow their own equitable share. I think going forward, we need to get an articulation that makes it very clear what this is for. I think the transition period is one in which we have to accept some of the lessons, but on the whole, we think that our biggest problem is that the control members is such that we come after the fact. I mean, if we have a business plan, let's say from Province Act, this is already beginning to come through on the information before us, and it says the plan says they're going to do this project on this methodology, therefore creating these jobs. At a contracting point, when they choose to do a high plant method, let's say, based on the labor intensive method, if you come after the fact, when a contract is in place and so on, there's very little you can do. And what do you do with that violation? It actually has no standing. You can't say cancel that contract because there's now a contract in place. I just think that in the engagement, which we've already started with Treasury going forward, the conditions of this grant and the controls need to be refined. I think that the committee would be correct to say there's various things going out there, there's confusion going out there, there's no definition. So I think I take that point, but I think some of the DORA conditions that were put in the final version of DORA were a bit beyond us, because you recall the first negotiations between NDOT and Treasury, there were reports we brought here on what the condition, the framework was. Then there were public processes that relate to finalizing the DORA. Some of those are a bit out of our hands. And I think some of the mechanisms that were put there do really limit what we can do. I personally, though, in the final comment, would have said what I've seen in the Eastern Cape, just about not about now what type of roads they are targeting and what potholes they are targeting. I mean, I would agree that I think if you go to Mthatha, for instance, this fund could have been used to wipe out all of those potholes, right? No, but we were limited by what they already had in their plan and how far we could push them in the time that we had. I just think that on the other things, though, I mean, like on the emerging contractor program and the household contractors and the numbers that they are pushing through as a province, I think other provinces, in fact, including even the pioneer on this thing, KZN. So I'm saying there's a balance and there's an improvement that I think we need to agree could be done.
Thank you, Advocate. Thank you. Just in one sentence, this new grant is basically a combination of new money, the KG as we used to know it, and the APWP money. So they collapse into one. So there will inevitably be commitments coming from a year or two back. That still needs to be sorted out. I think that, like Advocate is saying, in the initial years, those will be inevitable. But going forward, because everything else will have to be dependent on the conditions in the Act, if we are strict on that one, nobody will actually be able to violate it. More so because we are also then responsible for signing off the business plan. So if we are to say yes on something, it should be something that we believe in and something that we are sure. It is worth the grant it is made of. I will leave the issue around the mobile laboratories and how we recruit students to Helen, who is our HRD expert. But just then deal with the issues around Shobhakalola. The issue of Gauteng, I saw it coming and I know that it would come. There are a number of reasons. I've indicated earlier on that the choice really was motivated by the proximity to harbors, not neighboring countries, harbors for purposes of import, and also the ability to distribute being central to some of the other provinces, and also because we can only start small and you expand based on demand, and obviously as you increase capacity based on the fact that the cost, the establishment cost would be less as you roll out. The figures that came out of the study unfortunately suggest that whereas the three plans as we plan them could produce 1.6 million bicycles in 10 years. Housing can break even in the fourth year and has the potential to manufacture from the onset 72,000 per month. that is the studies that we commissioned the experts to do, and as they crunch the numbers, that is what is coming out of the Gauteng model. So it is not a big problem, but it was just to demonstrate that you can actually use Gauteng, the single plant, to roll out in, even in the non-other provinces. They have the potential to break even and also get you enough resources for you to be able to roll out because of the volumes there. And the ease of logistics. So I think that is we were not necessarily saying that we will go to Gauteng because there's a dire need there, but because Gauteng can actually become the cash cow for us to be able to roll out cheaper in the other provinces. But if government makes available money, we can start anywhere, anyhow, but it will be very expensive and also unsustainable in the long run. Now, I wanted to put this slide because I've always referred to manufacturing as if it is a wholly new manufacturing exercise. But if you look at it, it is more assembly plants than manufacturing exercise. There will be components from 1 to 4 that can be manufactured in those plants. But there will always be the others that are imported. So it's a combination of manufacturing certain components, importing others, and then the real business or the overall business is then that of assembly. And mainly because of the cost-benefit analysis that was done, that is the best case scenario which has come to around 710. The Netherlands project was the Shovagalula 1 some years back, and then it was based on an agreement that there would be second-hand bicycles brought into the country, and then slightly fine-tuned for use by students, by learners. One, the numbers were not that big enough, but also two, the majority of them were not only second hand, but third and fourth hand. So they could not be sustained. They broke up in 2 or 3 months, even in weeks. And at that time, Shovagalula 1 did not have an after-sales maintenance program, which is what led to the change of approach, that they would acquire new vehicles, and then we'll have an after-sales maintenance program. I want to mention the issue around maintenance program, because this is what will continue, even if we are to assemble them in the country. The maintenance program was based on the distribution plan or strategy, which were mainly designed by provinces. Then, based on the volumes, they would then put a container with a manager, whose manager will be able to sell parts and also do minor repairs. That is still happening even today. The provinces are carrying the bill for the manager. So that is still happening, and that is still the approach we would want to continue. So should we go for this assembly plant, we still have that, and those numbers in terms of job creation are not reflected in the 2.8. So it's over and above. Those are indirect or induced jobs, but and they also then are dependent on the distribution pattern. So it is per X number of bicycles distributed, then we'll have a plant. It is not necessarily a permanent policy. What I know is that there is at least one in the district municipalities. So, but depending on the number that has been in the rural nature of the municipality, you can then have one because of the volumes there. So that is the program that will continue, even if we do this. Now, 280 jobs is very little. But if you look at the whole program, it is about supply and distribution of bicycles to the learners. So the 280 jobs look very minimal, but the number of vehicles per job is what becomes very critical and important. And if your main aim is access and mobility, then you are going to produce a large number of vehicles, bicycles, even though they are produced by fewer jobs. Okay, we are not contributing much in terms of the job creation, but in terms of the target, our real target, which is the learners, the needy learners in the rural areas, would go a long way to deal with the backlog and the stresses that is associated with kids walking long distances. So I think it needs to be balanced in that way. But I Gauteng was purely because if we were to invite private investors, they would be keen to start in Gauteng because that's where they'll make money so that they can distribute throughout the country. But I know that government has also got a social responsibility more than an economic responsibility. And we can go into other provinces. The chances are that if you skip Gauteng, you are in the rural provinces only, you will not be able to sustain the plan in the other areas. When I say sustain, I mean you will always have to inject money in government in those areas to make them business viable. So housing was factored into the statistic analysis because of basically that factor, but we can start anywhere. And like I've indicated, the startup cost is also being brought down by the fact that the IRR is much higher because, again, housing is in the mix. Not because we like housing. If we can start in Limpopo, I'd be very much happy. Yeah, Eastern Cape is there fortunately. So I think on the Stobagalula, that is that much I can do. But the Netherlands experience, there were small numbers and they were breaking quite easily, quite often. So it was not necessarily successful, as successful as venture at the time. The other issue is generally, Chair, is when we were requested to come to the portfolio committee, we were told that we need to come and talk about job creation within the sector as a response to the new growth path. And then when we wanted to know deeper into the specifics, we were also then told that it was a follow-up of the April meeting. And then when we went into the April meeting records and on the issues that were raised that needed to be elaborated upon, we had Samba Soge, Shobagalola, and the holistic skills development plan for the department. Now, and then the rail rolling stock program. Now, it does not necessarily mean that in terms of the branch line strategy, we don't have plans, and we can be in a position to indicate whether the department is doing, should it be required of us to do that, and also what sort of opportunities can be created. But the issue around the branch line, the history around them is that they were abandoned mainly by Transnet because they were not profitable. So that is the official line from Transnet. Government, if it wants to come in, the reasons need to be more social than economic. Because it's basically to go on to tap onto the rural areas and go on to a farm, a couple of farmers, to then transport the fresh produce onto the market, and also mobility in terms of the carrier of people. But you would not necessarily go and revitalize the branch lines, because you can run them profitably. They will never be run profitably. Transnet has made the calculations long time ago and has made projections. That is not the space that they're going to occupy. But we have the branch line strategy as part of the freight logistics strategy in the department. We also are finalizing the rail policy that talks to the revitalization of branch lines. We actually have got a category of those lines that are aged and have been prioritized because they lead up to some of the trunk rail corridors. We can provide that type of information. And then we also are soon the process of the policy would be followed by the development of a rail legislation that would again clarify the roles of the different departments in terms of who is responsible for branch lines and so on and so on. But we are also establishing the RER, the Rail Economic Regulator. Among the roles is the vertical separation in terms of infrastructure and operations, wherein infrastructure is owned by the states. That state will have to come into the space of branch line also, but whoever becomes the owner of the infrastructure would have to deal with the issues around the branch line, and then let operators compete on the rail, not for on the operation. So I think those are some of the initiatives, but I think we were just restricted by the mandate. We can also tap onto the colleagues in the department who undertook a study mission or a tour on this issue around shipbuilding. They went and gathered enough information around international expertise, and we are fully aware that it is one of the priorities of the department. But the whole issues around localization plan, not only in the transport sector, but in all the other sectors, is basically the demand. So should of necessity be demand-driven, because history would tell us that in almost all the former homelands, you have those buildings that were built and rented out to business people, but were built by the so-called development corporations then. I think 90% of them are white elephants now, because there was no real plan around how they would be sustained in almost all the areas. Now, this localization plan in terms of EPUB, if it is not well structured and not well thought after, it would go the same way. That is why we are saying where you invest, you need to be very sure that you are able to sustain the business for a very long time. And that is why I think, Honorable Chair, we should not just wish away this issue around housing, because to us, it has got a strategic imperative of making sure that this whole program survives. Not because we like housing, but it would make economic sense, more especially if you are to attract private investors or you are to go for a PPP model, that the business is sustained throughout the country. You need to unfortunately, we don't have time. I would have spent a few minutes again. The BRT lines are going to fail if they are not being constructed where there are volumes. So it is dependent on volumes. In other instances, people would say, why are you going there? Because already there are services. But it's because they would want to go there to tap onto that those volumes so that you are able to roll out the other phases where there are no volumes and are able to cross-subsidize. So I think it's a workable model. But if we really would want to pump in money time and again and again and again, we can start where there are no volumes, whether we are going to manufacture 200 bicycles, for example, and we have 80 people. It would not necessarily be a viable business proposition. And I'm not saying government is in the business of doing business, but I'm saying government, if they want to put somebody and invest, even if it's a cooperative or an NGO, they would want to make sure that he is sustained. Thank you very much, Chair.
I think I will give you an opportunity, Honorable Mana. I think I need to come in here to explain how we think as the portfolio committee. I think it is important for us to understand what is it that we are doing as government in this country. We are doing two things. We are improving the social standard of the poor to a level where there would be even level of standards. That is point number one. Point number two, we are transforming the economy in the country and ensuring that we don't have a first world country and a third world country in one country. That's what we are doing. We are narrowing the gap between the super rich and the very poor in terms of the economy. We are opening economic participation for those that have been denied that opportunity by the apartheid government. I have my own map here. This is Gauteng. This tiny purple here is Gauteng. In terms of vastness, the smallest of them all. Let us forget population. The population is inkulu eGauteng because people are migrating from their provinces because of lack of economic opportunities. There is no person who would want to live away from home angaziboni iingane zakhe every day ayohlala eGauteng. The only thing that is pushing a person to go and live in Gauteng and live is family yakhe at KZN are economic opportunities that are presented in Gauteng. And then the social problems that are created by that
are the families that break as people migrate. Women who have to look after the children without a father. And then a father who finds a partner away from home. The result of that kube a multiple relationships are impacted with HIV and AIDS. Nama divorce so abonayo. So tina we want a cost benefit that is not only looking at the cost benefit in terms of through the eye of an investor. We want the cost benefit through the eye of a government official. And a government official has got a different understanding from the investor. Because a cost benefit to the government would start with how much is government spending on social grants? How much is government spending on free services that are supposed to be paid by umzali? And because a parent can't pay for those services, then the government finds itself compelled to provide those services. There is no parent who would want ukuthi umntwana wakhe afide u-government a plate of food. A child that leaves home engadlile aze ayofika esikoleni aphiwe ukudla u-government. The only meal lo mntwana azoyidla is from the school nutrition program because the parent can't provide this child with a plate of food. And cost effectiveness from a government official will be centered around all those things which end. Is it cheaper to locate a factory in Gauteng and not in a presidential poverty nodal point, where the results of placing that factory in a presidential poverty nodal point would be to enable each family that has got is participating in this? The 280 jobs would then reduce the dependency of 280 families on government social grants. So the bicycle that is going to be purchased by a department of transport is actually reducing the expenditure of the social development department. Because the family is there was the Uguzipa umntwana. Akusabi u-government ozokhipha the social grant, anikeze free water, anikeze free electricity, anikeze free sanitation, anikeze school nutrition, anikeze all the things that the social development department is providing free. When you calculate that, you will then begin to see this bicycle plant, assembling plant, located in Kwanongoma, is actually responding to a much broader agenda than the cost effectiveness of an investor as Bugela Jokuti imalini profit has or yes. Because u government have a big profit. U government ubega ukuthi. To what extent are we able to make people self-sufficient and self-reliant and reduce their dependence on us? as a government and only provide to the people those things that are supposed to be provided by government, not the things that are supposed to be provided by the parent to the child. So the agenda here is to move South Africa from being a welfare state into a developmental state. And then the direction that is going to be given to our investors and identifying areas of investment will be informed by that. So we are not going to argue the issue on the basis of what is lichip yini ibhayisikili elu 1,400 lithengwa government if the plant is located in an area where government is spending more than 5,000 in one family. Singakwazi ukubona ukuthi that plant is actually reducing its dependency of 280 families on the government through this plant. So sifuna thina ama government officials abuke lokho angatshelwa cost effectiveness ye private sector, because the government is in a different business than that of the of the private sector. I just thought would I must give that, so that the questions that are going to be asked and the comments that are made by members are responded to from that perspective. Honorable Manas.
Oh, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, probably let me start with the first presentation. I see here, Chair, on page 6, it's not written here which slide, it's not numbered, the Transport Research Activity Centers, which support learners and educators on math, science, and technology. Page 6. There are 33 mobile laboratories. Where are these laboratories? Probably if you could give us a breakdown of where they are situated, but as well on the CODs, the partnership with universities. Probably, Chair, it would be imperative that on the maritime studies, if the department could form more partnerships with other institutions, beyond KZN, because the reality is that, there is limited access to information insofar as issues related to maritime studies are concerned. That would just be a request, Chair. Chair, coming back to the Shovakalula, well, I hear the DDG saying it makes economic sense to them, but it can't be about them. Because my understanding is that we're sitting here being public representatives, representing the poor of our people. But as well, looking at the criteria at which they used to, or rather, probably not them, they are experts who conducted the studies, to arrive at a determination that the plant should actually be located in this province, KZN, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng. I would have probably thought one of the criteria, as you mentioned, Chair, would be to look at where the high levels of unemployment are, high levels of poverty, And Honorable Dagute made mention of the fact that we can't follow apartheid patterns. If in Gauteng with industrial space land, it's because it was
created by the apartheid regime. Now you've got then to create industrial space and land elsewhere so that this government post-94 is able to take pride that such space, such land was an industrial land was created by the government post-1994. But as well, as the chairperson has correctly alluded, that would help us in dealing with migrant labor. Now, I am saying if it is expensive, it's fine, but I suspect it would be for long-term benefits. You're speaking to the right people here. If you're saying it's expensive, well, it's fine, but let's look at the long term. Because you would have transferred skill here, two people in the rural areas, two people in the rural provinces. If I look at the setup cost chart, the build option in Gauteng is much more expensive than the two rural provinces, which is KZN and Eastern Cape. And Chair, there is no mention of how this is going to benefit cooperatives. You know, in terms of who will be supplying what, who will be supplying toilet paper, because that alone could, create more jobs, you know. Chairperson, if I move to slide 79 on the bicycle manufacturing potential, is the department having a plan to develop exchange programs with overseas universities so that indeed this notion of importing balls, chains, spokes, tires, and belts is something of the past? Will there be a program that will seek to send our own students abroad to learn these particular skills and competencies so that they are able to come back and be manufactured here in the country? But as well, Chair, I see there have been interviews conducted with, amongst others, local bicycle industry, local manufacturing industry. And from where I'm sitting, there are very few HDI players in this industry. So my submission, Chair, would be that there's got to be a clear and stringent conditions, you know, compelling this local manufacturing industry to, you know, have a BE outlook, a broad-based black economic empowerment outlook, you know. But also, have programs which will be set out very clear in the conditions of how they are going to joint venture companies led by young people, women, people with disabilities, so that indeed there is clear transfer of skill. So in the future, we know that these bicycles can actually be manufactured by entities that are led by historically disadvantaged individuals. Thank you very much, Chair.
What I hear you saying is that let us move far from a belief that there is a racial group that is only consumer of goods. Let us create a traders within that group.
But Chair, just one last point. I think it's rather unfortunate. Indeed, absolutely. I agree that the target here is the learner. But I think it's unfortunate when the department can say our main focus is not on job creation, when the president has made it very clear that each department has got to prioritize job creation. The president has made that very clear. The State of the Nation and all the addresses that he has made in the House, that every department development. So these processes have got to run concurrently. You've got to create jobs while also responding to the target and distribute the actual bicycles or whatever.
Thank you. Okay. Also, I have noted the health. I think that the ODDG Mokonyan mentioned that they were responding to issues that were raised during the last meeting. But we would accommodate that because this is work in progress. It's work in progress. And also, we have taken a decision that our approach in all this would not be an us and them approach. Our approach is how do we improve on what we have, so that we keep on enriching and learn from one another. But I think it would be maybe an oversight of some sort if both in the minutes of that meeting and as well as in the communication that went to the department requesting this follow-up meeting, there was no mention of cooperatives and indirect jobs, because this portfolio committee is very keen to see the establishment of sustainable cooperatives in South Africa. And also we are very, very keen in demonstrating that cooperatives are not a by-the-way thing. And they are also not a Cinderella type of businesses. Cooperatives are in other countries and also in this country, in the mainstream of the economy. And one of them is Clover, the milk that we all use every day. Clover started as a cooperative. A farmer sitting somewhere with their joints, cooperative, abe member a cooperative, asengubisi lwakhe aluyise kwa Clover, and then luprocess se luphuma kwi ephaketheni with a Clover label, but it's the milk that comes from different people that own milk cows. And it's the same approach throughout the world. A cooperative is a unit that brings people that are seated and scattered all over to one, a central point for various reasons. It could be a marketing reason, it could be accessing raw material and all that. So this committee is very keen on that. And we have seen also the approach here, Santaco. When Santaco talks about the value that they add in terms of job creation, they don't only count the jobs that are provided by Santaco. They also count the women that are cooking and selling food to the taxi drivers. Provide the loans, and we would want to see that kind of an approach. Honorable Tom.
Thank you. the skills development. I see the slides in page 3 has partnerships with universities, 13 of them. And when it comes to FETs, it doesn't indicate whether all the FETs have been approached and they agree to implement the curriculum that has been developed. And to me, Chair, the major focus should have been the FETs themselves, because we do not, I think, want to have university graduates in the transport sector only. We want to have people from the FETs, and the FETs can produce those engineers in particular that we need as a country more than the universities can do. And share out you know, in the follow-up meetings with the department in the human resource development, want to see how the department is going to produce engineers using FETs and not you know, university graduates, because we can produce more through FETs. In the slide in page 6, you know, is misleading. That, you know, we are targeting universities. We want to work with universities, but you know, colleges, we are very scanty with the information. What is it that we want to do with universities, and how many graduates in engineers, in engineering, do we want to produce, and where, and in which sectors must they go? You know, if that information can be provided later. The second issue relates to the PMU that National Treasury is not agreeing to the funding, and that the department is going ahead alone. Whether without the support of National Treasury, this task is going to be very difficult for the department, and what is the strategy in ensuring that that task is carried out with or without the National Treasury? And do you think that National Treasury needs to be persuaded, and how it can be persuaded? Should we get involved as a committee? Do you want to persuade that? I did not hear that, you know, persuading us as a committee to ensure that you are supported by National Treasury. And what ammunition do you give to us to ensure that National Treasury agrees with you? I see the PMU assisting with the implementation of the work that the department is doing, not only in the road infrastructure, but the infrastructure in total that this transport sector needs for the country. And I would ask that you know, we be given some ammunition to persuade the National Treasury to agree with the creation of the structure. The third issue around bicycles, Chair, is that when the department in page 3 indicates the skills that are needed in each sector, they did not indicate the skills that are needed in the development of the bicycle plant. What skills are needed, and whether those skills are are available in the country? Do we need to develop those skills? What? How long is it going to take us to develop those skills? But it seems to me, Chair, that we need to do that breakdown. Where are the skills? Are they in the country? Are we developing them? And how are we going to develop those skills? The last issue, I would agree with the honourable member who said we need also to look at the building our own ship. I don't know whether that idea is not in the department's thinking now, currently, and because that idea is not in their thinking, even when they engage with us, they don't even want to show to us that they have some thinking about building their own capacity as a country to build our own ships. And I think we as a committee, we are going to engage in that issue. And maybe the warning to the department is that we would want to find you ready with ideas on how we can build our own ship. We think that the capacity was broken down in 1993, that we can build that capacity, and we must start where we left off as a country in building our own ship. And the department chair will be engaged, I think, on that issue of how do we build our own ship.
Honorable Ken. I will just have a quick one in Shobakalula, as expected, of course. It won't be me, it won't be the meeting if I don't say anything. I think, to me, my questions are today answered indirectly. I remember quite well, way back, when they delivered 1,000 bicycles to Atrichville. I said to them, but when these bicycles for rural areas, why deliver in Atrichville? Atrichville is in Gauteng. I'm from Gauteng, and as well as Eastern Cape as well. And the answer was, no, not Atrichville per se, but some areas around Atrichville. And I said the other day, I think we need to make a difference between rural areas and semi-rural areas. Because delivering bicycles in housing, truly speaking, there are no rural areas there. The rural areas that are there, Imikuku around Johannesburg, and that is what you call rural areas, which these bicycles were not meant for those people. That is why I say I think now I'm answered today that you are concentrating on housing, which is my point anyway. But at the same time, in rural areas, I think we need to think thoroughly. Having these buildings where we'll assemble and do what and do what. And by the way, you have already delivered in rural areas. But my question is, how do these children travel to school driving a bicycle from home to school when there are no roads? Are they using the main roads with the cars and trucks and everything are using? That's my question. What's the idea of giving them bicycles when there is no road?
Yeah, I can see in Mthatha, as you have mentioned, the advocates, they are busy with the roads in a snail pace, though. There is a short pedestrian lane next to the road, but even then, it's a short distance from Vidisville to Mthatha. And Mazuunazuunazu Road 1 and 2 is speaking. That's very short. Very short. And the purpose, I don't know. Because at the beginning, we thought, oh, they are preparing for these bicycles that they are delivering. I'm from Kunu, let me just put it that way. I'm from the area called Kunu, where children move in and out, walking, no bicycles. That's my question is, if you deliver these bicycles, what do these children in rural areas, which roads are they using? There are mountains, there are rivers. If they are using the national roads that we have and provincial roads that we have, what a risk. What a risk. That means we are expecting accidents in every day when they drive. Thank you, Chair.
Before I give to other members, I want to simplify what Honorable Gele is saying. She is linking the production and manufacturing, assembling of bicycles to the target group. Why would we have an assembling plant that assembles and manufactures bicycles in South Africa? It is because there is a scholar transport program in the Department of Transport, and it is targeting children that are residing mainly in the rural area. And then she is saying, if those children are in the rural area, the infrastructure in the rural area is not conducive to the program of Shofar Galuli. And then she is raising a point of saying, an indirect job opportunity or infrastructural development opportunity comes up as a result of this Shofar Galuli program, where in a rural road you will then maybe have a need to then build a bicycle lane, which is another job creation in terms of infrastructural development. Because above the department, we have two champions. The president being the champion for infrastructural development and the deputy president being the champion for job creation. And Mangele is beginning to speak to that. Yes, the plant, the distribution to the target group, but there is another infrastructural development opportunity if we understand where the target group is found. It is found in the rural areas where there is no adequate road infrastructure.
And if then you want to avoid accidents from taking place, you would also need an infrastructural development program, need to plan for provision of bicycle lanes in that infrastructure. So it begins to say, leading to the schools where many of the children would be using the bicycles, you would then need to do that. And I even see another, I mean, a job opportunity of the people now who will be trained to marshal. Again, Babo Nemaguyi's colleague in the Winesem shop in the suburb. Children cross the road, school children cross the road because there is a person who is directing e-traffic. You see, job creation sometimes, abanye abantu bacabanga ukuthi we create ngefetch. I saw a very creative way of creating jobs in China. Ukuthi, there is even a person who is just standing next to the bank tellers in the stations, train stations, who would direct you and who would even notice that the money that you are using to buy a ticket is a Hong Kong dollar when you are actually in a province that doesn't use a Hong Kong dollar. That is a creative way of job creation. So we should then look at such things to say, if we're talking job creation, what is it that will be done? Providing lama bicycle will then kukhona nomnye umsebenzi mina ngiwubonile of teaching children how to ride the bicycle, because I was part of an event where the minister was handing over bicycles at the University of Zululand. And all the children that were given those bicycles could not ride the bicycles. That is another job that would come. So, Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of the questions have been asked, so I won't be repeating them. I just have some questions of clarity. The first is on your page 6, where you talk about the lack of skills. And you talk about, for example, internships are with rotational basis. If you could just unpack what that means, because I don't quite know what that means. And then also I'm concerned that you say here, utilization of retired professionals for mentoring and coaching still to be properly coordinated, which to me really means nothing's been done about it. And I'm I feel quite strongly about this, because the reality is, as much and as atrocious as what apartheid brought to this country, one of the things that it did do, however, was that it did have some good professional people. And those people, I believe, are being lost somewhere. They've either been retired or they're off somewhere that we could utilize and use them to grow our skills base that we desperately need. So I'm a little concerned that nothing's been done, quite honestly. And there needs to be a coordinated program, because it'd be a lot cheaper. Not only a lot cheaper in the aspect in that it requires sort of on-the-job training, and these people have not just got on-the-job training, but they've got vast experience where the new people who'd be learning these skills would effectively be getting a shortcut without having to have experienced the difficulties that they would find when these experienced people already have come through them and already tell the new skilled people about these difficulties that they may encounter. So that's just the one. The other is on your page 37, where you talk about the bicycle program. And I'm not going to elaborate on on what was previously said, but what I do want to ask is, you're talking about various numbers and the requirements, the demand for these bicycles. Upon what do you base it? Surely you're not just basing it on just the population. Surely there's got to be some more intense, for example, it's no point creating, making bicycles for a community who actually doesn't want it. No matter how good we may think it is and how great it is, that it doesn't want it, or a community that simply doesn't even know what a bike is, wouldn't know how to ride it, or in an environment which is not conducive for bicycles. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands, for example, which is really rocky and hilly and so forth. I can't imagine anybody of any age being on a bicycle. So these are the things that I sense have been omitted and ignored, and we've taken for granted that we're like Holland and everything is flat and everything's fine, everybody can ride a bike. So I just sense that there may be some lack of research done in this regard. Then also, I'd like to some input on if there has been any, and if so, what it is. The private sector, what is it, have they been in here as far as their expertise is concerned, as far as their assistance is concerned in developing this project? Then on the next page, page 38, you talk about rental and building options. If you could just, obviously you couldn't get the detail now, and if you can't, if you could send it to us afterwards. You say startup costs. I mean, what does that mean? Does it mean every single possible conceivable thing that is required? It also, you also don't talk about sort of running costs, which I'd like to find out a little bit more. So, for example, when you talk about these rental costs, what does it mean? Does it mean that you are renting machinery, or you're renting machinery and property? Are you buying machinery and renting property? Or what, you know, exactly what does it actually mean? Because it could be misleading. And then I think I'm just looking at, because I think all the others, Madam Chair, I think all the others have been dealt with previously. Just thank you very much.
Followed by Honorable Mtak. Thank you, Chairperson. Many of these questions have been forwarded to the DJ. Mine is that follow up on this, the monitoring of the bicycles. Because on the last meeting, we were talking about how to monitor the bicycles because of those bicycles before they were selling 450, and then there's no answer of what are we going to do with these bicycles if the kids are will be able to get these bicycles full of charge. And the other one is they've already talked about them by distributing the bicycle in the rural area, like Mpumalanga and Limpopo, where there is a crisis of children going long distance, getting tired before they enter the classrooms. And the other thing is on page 3 by the rail safety inspection. My worry is that on these issues, in this morning, I hear that Gautrain is not moving because of the cable. And then people are preferring to use the Gautrain at this moment because it's faster. How are we going to deal with this problem of stealing the cable in the railway? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Doug.
Thank you, Speaker. Chairperson. All the previous speakers said, so we're not going to make a duplication of questions because they are all answered. But what I would like to know from the department is this: when you deliver these bicycles, do you involve us as the reps from those areas, or you are just doing it yourself without our involvement? I just wanted to ask that question. Thank you. before a department responds, I think there are also issues that I think cannot be responded to by this team because they belong to another team. And I would want us to highlight those so that we can defer them and raise them at the appropriate time. Like the issue of the railway line the issue of the disturbance of the trains because there is a high rate of cable theft and what have you. But you must also understand, Doguti, in this committee, we have done what the minister has done in the department. There are champions also on who's dealing with what, particularly now in terms of the ANC. So that's why you would find that there are areas of interest. A person who is in charge of railway transportation, uzobabot kule meeting, as abuzimebuzo ya kwa railway, because the area yake of responsibility. So that is what is coming up. And you would have noticed also who were the most vocal people on issues of maritime transportation. It's the person who deals with maritime. And who was most vocal in terms of e-public transport, uzomuzwa lowo muntu speaking loudly with a very loud voice because the research here we enter around that. When we deal with the issue of my accident, also the traffic management, you will be able to identify who's responsible for that. That is what is beginning to come up. That's what I just wanted to clarify. But I also wanted to respond to issues raised by the Honorable Defectors from where I sit, particularly on the area of market research. I think that the presentation made indicated that the market research was thoroughly done. It caters for the issue of the understanding of the market, the urban and rural. The presentation indicated what is happening in terms of demand in rural and demand in urban. But mina, I come from KwaZulu-Natal, a very mountainous province. And I'm from Harding, a very rural area. And I have indicated in the past that the year on which I started schooling, 1959, was the year on which my eldest brother was starting to teach in the same school that I was schooling. And he used to use a bicycle going to school. And he would carry me in that bicycle and my sister's van. So if I simply go in the way frame like a family where I would sit because I'm a girl, and then at the back there was another seat where la walk la kona ingane got at the way. So
The bicycle was ridden by three people. My brother, who was a teacher. And it distance from home to that school was 10 miles. And 10 miles is longer than 10 kilometers. And the researcher knows, Kuti, from Enjangwe going to Wamakhi James School, where we the road, the 912 is going to be constructed. You 2 mountains. I'm responding to this question, Honorable De Freitas. There are techniques that you develop in order to, when you are confronted with the situation. A person who has lived in the rural areas knows what it is. When you approach a mountain riding a bicycle, how you don't ride a bicycle on. You do the zigzag so that you can climb the mountain still on the bicycle. If you don't do that, you are riding a bicycle like it was ridden by the three people. When we hit the mountain, the three of us would alight from the bicycle and one would push the bicycle until we are on top of the mountain. So that is what happens in the rural areas. And also, ayikho lento leyo ukuthi in South Africa, there's no one who knows what a bicycle is. A bicycle laziwa kakhulu kuma rural areas. Nehash. Into yaziwa kuma rural areas, a bicycle nehash. Mhlambe enye into ke imoto khona mhlambe la ingaziwa khona, but not a bicycle. So, mina ngifuna sibuze questions that are not going to create into it. We are looking at issues from a perceived need than a self need. There is a self-need in terms of the bicycles in the rural areas. And also there would be a greater market for bicycles in South Africa if we were to promote it's a mass participation sport. So, bengifuna nje ukuthi ningakuhluphi ngokuze nemibuzo engadingi ukuthi iphendulwe yini.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks for the questions from the honorable members. I think, just in passing, that's the main reason why the Holland project collapsed. Because the bicycles could not sustain the conditions in the country. Okay. I don't know. Maybe when I responded, I created an impression that I'm pro-urban. I am a public servant, Chair. And my work is in the public service. And in the public service, you do what you are told. And the message has been very clear, more especially in terms of our focus. I did, however, indicate that in the presentation we were presenting a report. This is a report that we commissioned after we were told to do so in April. And this, I indicated that this is a report that we are processing to get to the end. If the presentation we indicated a number of options. We did not even indicate the preferred option. So I just wanted us to clarify that fact. So I was presenting from the writer's point of view.
As a public servant, I would definitely respond differently because I am a public servant. Chair, for simplicity purposes, we will make this report available to the committee. It is fairly detailed in terms of demand estimation and all the other things and how the studies will come up, where arrived at. What we will not have will be the department's perspective in terms of how it was processed and then came to a particular choice in terms of the option. Now, having said that, I also did indicate that we've got no particular attachment to Gauteng, and I also then talked about how Gauteng was cited in the report. And I even indicated that we can start anywhere in the country, but the implications are this. And I even said that if we were to do 1, 2, 3, then government, because of its role, which in the main social, modern economic, will have then to come together. I indicated all those all those issues. So if I sounded like I'm not from Limpopo, then I need to declare where I come from. Now, Chair, in terms of the other issues and the questions, I definitely agree with the chairperson. Will not do justice to certain areas which are a responsibility of others in the department. Although we are expected to, at the high level, provide feedback or responses, but on details we'll have to take them back. The issue around shipbuilding, branch line strategy, other maritime-related issues, and the cable theft will definitely pass them over to the respective people, and then they will have to come and assist us. Helen, as I indicated earlier on, will have to deal with the issue around the mobile laboratories and why universities are not their FETs, or what is our role with them. Universities and FETs. In the report, because it was also the brief, there is an allusion to NGO formations, and they're very, very close to the cooperative strategy. But in the department as a whole, Chair, we also are as passionate as the chairperson in terms of our promotion of a cooperative scheme. We have moved a little bit far in terms of implementing the Santaco strategy. We are doing the same in terms of formalizing the small bus operators. And again, the line we are taking is that of a formation of cooperative schemes. But in the report here, part of the model, there is a private investment model, there's a PPP, there is a government, wholly public sponsored model, and there is also a NGO related. It's not in the presentation, Chair. It is in the report. Like I said, we'll then make the report available. So it is going to be, it is one of our main aim. And in fact, very interesting things are coming out of the Chair 2020 strategy and the cooperative schemes in that area. So there'll definitely be, if it is going to be the preferred model, cooperatives could be one of the models that is being adopted. The issue of the plant and the buses, I would want to separate them a little bit. The distribution and the assembly and manufacturing, because the input vis-à-vis the output are slightly different, and there are more outputs per input processed. That's why I have indicated. I did not say, and if I sounded like that again, I apologize, that the focus is not on job creation. I have said, should this be an area where we are looking for many jobs, the study indicated that for 3 plants you can only have 280 jobs, direct jobs. So that is what the study is saying, and it's basically in terms of the categories of the people that are needed there. So I would not have clearly indicated that, we are not doing enough or we will do enough. But that was what the study is saying, that it's only 250, in the 3 plants, not even in one. In the 3, it's 208. Obviously, those are direct jobs. The indirect jobs, like the workers and the other related issues, are not even included in the studies. So this is as we process this report, those are some of the things that would need to come into the fore. But it does not necessarily mean that we say we are not in the space of job creation. We just indicated that for the plants, for example, for one plant is 73, and in other areas 118, and so on. So those are the numbers that we are given to say, based on the cost model that we are putting forward, these are the kind of figures or numbers that you can produce. There is an issue around the startup cost, and again, the report will indicate what we mean by the startup cost and what we mean by the operational cost. Everything is costed fully in the report, and it's making quite useful assumptions, because that's why we were so excited to say that the main thing that it said, which is what we wanted, it said the establishment of an assembly or manufacturing plant in South Africa is feasible. That then became very key for us. In terms of the nitty-gritty, even the figures, we can even up them. For an example, it would make me talk about Gauteng again. I don't want to talk about it. But if we were to move out of Gauteng, okay, for example, if you place it somewhere else, it would then mean the demand for logistics, the demand for delivery and other things, those indirect jobs, have become much more higher. But the volume that you can produce at a particular point in those plants are slightly smaller. So that is a number crunching exercise. As I said, it is doable all over South Africa, provided you are able to cater for this other thing that the chairperson has indicated, that a bicycle is not just a bicycle. It has got the multiplying effect of the spin-off that need to be factored into the total cost of a household. I think I've dealt, although I was a bit general, but I think I have dealt with the number of issues. Oh, the issues around the bicycle infrastructure, I'm sure advocates can deal very much with some of those. And why do you involve us when you distribute the vehicles? There is a process from acquisition until up to distribution, from developing the need. The province do that. We don't do it at national. The province come up with the need, and how they collect the needs is they go into the communities, and they go into the rural communities and discuss and hold public participation processes with ward councillors. So as they are involved, the ward councillors and the councillors are involved at the very initial stages of the allocation processes. And there are, again, two categories. There are bicycles that are bought by the provinces. There are the bicycles that are bought by National Department of Transport. Of all those we buy as the National Department of Transport, 100% of them are free. But I know that there are provinces that categorize between free bicycles, and then some of them are subsidized, 50%. And again, it's also dependent on the rural nature and the semi-rural nature of the particular area and the need. So in terms of those needs, we are being given although we provide guidelines in terms of who are supposed to be the beneficiaries, but we are being given the list and everything associated with it and the process followed by the provinces themselves. So we depend largely on them. We would definitely, because in almost all instances, but there's always this symbolic distribution event. We'll definitely pass on the message that there's supposed to be an involvement of the honorable members, if they so wish, or if they've never been invited. I think I have dealt with quite a lot in terms of the bicycles and the plant. Thank you very much.
It's just a comment. There is a saying which says there is no smoke without fire.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe after bicycles we'll get the vehicle.
The vehicle.
Mm-hmm. You always talk, instead of saying bicycle, you say vehicle, which means there's something that is coming.
in my public transport space, vehicles been a bicycle, a bus, a taxi, a sedan, and an aeroplane. and an animal drawn card.
No, before you advocate, love, I just wanted to put OTTG at ease in terms of what we had. Our comments are not necessarily meaning that we did not hear what you were saying in terms of job creation, because the very same purpose of this meeting was around the job creation. And the presentation speaks to that. But what we were then saying was that when we sit here in this meeting, we also get an opportunity of understanding each other's thinking and point of departure. And the issues that we are raising are issues that indicate how we think as public representatives and how we wish the department to add in their own thinking and take into consideration how we view things. When we are saying that, we are not putting a blame to anyone. We are also not passing any judgment. We are affording you with an opportunity of understanding how we think, so that we can then improve the situation or the approach and broaden our perspective. When you present the report to us, there are things that we learn. And when we engage in those presentations, we assume that in those issues that we are raising, you are also learning something, which will then help improve
the manner in which we intervene in addressing issues on the ground. So it is not a situation of saying this is right and this is wrong. It is a situation of saying how can we better improve on what we already have. Like the issue of Gauteng versus Mpumalanga. You presented the case that justifies Gauteng, and no one is saying that is wrong. But Zagude, Honorable Zagude, presents a different case. Her rationale is different from your rationale. Your rationale is informed by the volumes and cost-effectiveness and all that. Zagude is saying there are provinces that are at the border of other African states, which then present an opportunity of a broader market. And that is a valid argument. And she is also presenting an argument that says, let us move from perpetuating the apartheid settlement pattern and economic hubs and begin to create new hubs that are speaking to the social problems and uneven levels of economic development that exist in our country. And it's also not because we have heard that we are saying you have taken a decision to locate a plant in Gauteng. You have presented Gauteng as a potential, and you are saying this is what informs Gauteng being considered as a potential site. And then Lagude is saying, before that decision is taken, let me present another argument that says if a plant was located in a province that is closer to the border of Swaziland and Mozambique, what market would we tend to in terms of skills development, in terms of broadening the demand, because you are then looking at a future expansion also and creating more demand. So it's not because we didn't hear you, we heard you, but we are then adding, we are seasoning the food that is already tasting nicely, but we are saying maybe if we were to add aromat, it's going to be much nicer. There are issues that I think we didn't touch on that for me are very, very important, which I think that as much as there would be a report that comes from people that have done the research in terms of strictly job creation. But from a government perspective, we then need to look at the spin-off and also the long-term socio-economic development that takes place in the community. And we also need to begin to specify the target group for this, because that also will assist us in identifying
the best possible site. If we were to say, in the process of creating jobs, we want to absorb people that have been retrenched in the job market, it's clear we are saying those that have been working, we are securing the Blizzard Union. So the people that would support the initiative is closer to the labor movement. If we are saying we are tapping on poverty, where there is no employment, we are creating jobs. We are dealing with issue of influx. We are reducing the influx from rural areas to urban or underdeveloped towns. It's part of the urban renewal. In this town of Umtata, there were one job. Now, I'll say Kunsebin. In Free State, Kwabune's mine is Avala, Abasasebin's Abad. Then you are justifying Uguti, why you're choosing this, as opposed to Upela, because it's a signal. And since you are moving now away from the research ANZ where the technical team says we rationale that comes from a government perspective, which particular to government also get a deal of none. But I also think it's going to be important for us, for each and every presentation that we make, we demonstrate that we are driven by the quest of having an integrated transport in South Africa. So, singularly, no infrastructure, no road infrastructure in isolation to e-rail infrastructure, because book, there is an impact on the road infrastructure of what is being done in the rail infrastructure. I don't know whether I'm making myself clear now. If Transnet is charged with the responsibility of transporting freight in this country, and then you find a situation where 80% of freight is not transported by rail, then you have to say something from the road infrastructure perspective. I find myself in this situation because all Transnet, who is responsible for transporting and looking after the rail infrastructure, is actually not doing its job. I don't know also if I'm making myself clear. Because issue of branch lines, ego Transnet, Noguchi Lai, South Africa, we have 22,000 kilometers of rail infrastructure, and we are utilizing 7,000. And then we are transporting most of the goods that are supposed to be in that 22,000 infrastructure by road. Raises a question. Is Transnet playing its role and mandate here effective enough? We will not argue that here. But I guess the entity and the responsibility of transport ama goods, core business, transport goods by rail, look after the rail infrastructure by vumele your mandate. But we offload the 80% of that mandate. Your transporter is freight by letter we road infrastructure.
it creates a problem, because then if that doesn't come, ukuthi mawukhuluma ngale ya network, honorable Mr. Mlau, mawukhuluma ngale ya network that we need to know, the investment in that road network, we should also be able to say, ukuthi, had Transnet played the role of transporting freight, mainly heavy freight by rail, were we going to have a road infrastructure that is degrading in the manner it is, and then be required to spend in the manner we are spending on the road infrastructure, and also delay in providing the infrastructure and upgrade the infrastructure that is gravel? I don't know whether I'm making sense. Because if a rail is sebenza kahle, the rail network, goods are transported by trains, you would save money, ngala we road infrastructure. And as a result, you would be able to move fast and upgrade the gravel roads that are maintained after every time gune rain. But then there are issues of attitude and behavior that we need also to talk about. We have been to the visit and oversight. It is unfortunate that akuzange kube khona i-coordination kahle. We would have loved ukuthi when we were visiting the provinces, then we would have been accompanied by a member of the staff from the department, because it would then have helped us to look at issues from a common perspective. The issue of Tamba Zonke needs to be revisited in this manner. We think that there is a great need for this country to come up with a model of the country. When we go to other countries, we don't arrive and we get told to good air. No, that municipality or that province's approach is this, and then that province's approach is this. When we visit countries, our point of entry is our ambassador in that country. And the first call is at the National Department of Transport. And then they would present to us an approach, a strategy of the country on issues of transport. Then they will take us through a situation when we assumed power, this was the situation. And then we developed our strategy for purposes of addressing these issues, and they would put down the issues that the strategy responds to. And then they would explain to us how they are structured in a particular way, their institutional arrangement. And then they would also explain to us the funding modules that they have put in place. And then they would also talk to us about their plan to develop the skills and the countries that they identified to which they were going to send their own people to acquire the skills that they did not have. And after that, they would then take us to sites and say, our strategy at provincial level is coordinated in this way, and our strategy at a local government level is coordinated in this way. That we can't find in South Africa. There is no model for the country. We have a national department. Then you go to Northwest, you find Northwest doing its own thing. We go to KZN, you find KZN doing its own thing. And then you visit two municipalities in KZN. You go to Mhlatuze, you find a model that differs from a model that is being implemented in Ugu. Then umuve from KwaZulu-Natal and go to the Eastern Cape. You arrive in the Eastern Cape, you find ukuthi what is being done in the Eastern Cape doesn't relate to what is being done in the Northwest, and also it doesn't relate to what is being done in KZN. Then you ask yourself, in 17 years, we still do not have a model of the country. That's it. In terms of infrastructure maintenance, this is the model of the country. So that when we look at the best performing province, we know which we have a template, we have developed a model of the country. And we are using our strengths and our initiatives. We bring, we come together to learn from each other and then say, we are taking this which is good in this province or this municipality and combining it with this that is good in this municipality, and then we are coming with a model of the country. So that Natipel, we can be visited and have people learning from us. And also, we can have an area that we can say, we have piloted this in this province or in these areas, then we are saying, this is the best model, it has to be replicated throughout the country. We can't be learning every time, because it also, that also situation is also created by the fact that it seems that as if there is no continuity. Each time there is a new DG and a new minister, things will then, we will have a different approach. And until such time we develop, we move towards developing a model for the country, we will keep on learning. And we will not even be able to measure the progress and the impact that we are making because we don't have a specific model that we are following. And I also think that more especially around Tamba Sonke, what we have seen, Tina, doesn't please us. Yes, there are pockets of areas. We visited just three provinces, Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape. There are pockets of good practices, but also there is no learning from each other, cross-pollination. And we think that to overcome that situation before we get into the next financial year, maybe there will be a need for a workshop on Tamba Sonke, where the provinces would also come on board, as well as the provincial portfolio committees and the district municipalities, because the integrated planning, integrated development plan, yenzeka kwi district municipality. That is the mandated district municipality. And if we arrive at district municipalities that do not have a plan of the national department and the plan of the provincial department to integrate it in the district plan, then it tells you which is a problem a cause. We think which that will facilitate a common approach. Again, I think that we also need to further debate the issue of the institutional arrangement. We have just been to a visit with Maritime. While there is a drive of reducing the transportation of goods by road, the plans in Eswatini Kumapot avula more, create an infrastructure that accommodates ama trucks, which means e planning ngale kwa Transnet, it's okay to have goods transported by road. And ngala kwa transport tina city, it is not okay to have goods transported by road. And if we don't find each other on that, then it means we are planning on cross purposes. The same situation also happens with Lendole air road infrastructure, our institutional arrangement. We write a letter to, we are a portfolio committee on transport. We're going to the provinces, which is the road infrastructure. We expect Uguti, it is the portfolio committee of transport that we shall interact with. When we arrive in the province, we discover Uguti, the road infrastructure is sitting with public works. And till now we have no relationship with the Portfolio Committee of Public Works. Then the issues that we would want to see from a common perspective as portfolio committees in terms of our oversight role. Now we are not interacting with a committee that is directly responsible for that. But we also want to say that in that workshop, we think that it would be important for the department to share with all of us, the national department, to share with all of us that will be in that workshop, the study tours that they have undertaken and what is it that they have seen in other countries, in the same way that the portfolio committee at national level would need to share that information, as well as what we, the reports of our observations of what we have seen, Kuma oversight, so that we can then all begin to see the uneven levels of the development of, and also of the assessment. Because if the department, yeah, we study to yodwa tinasiko siba nendlela esihlukene zobona lezinto sizitargetayo, I department izohamba yoniye kokwenza I study to we aviation, when till now we are going, taking another direction, maritime. So when we come back, the department is presenting, it prioritizes the aviation because you know, it has gone to undertake a study tour on aviation, and till now on the other side, we have gone to undertake a study tour on maritime. Then our reports, we are not supporting each other, and then we are not moving forward as a unit. Yes, there is no integrated approach. We think that from our side, you know, we share these views, the department, in terms of EPMU. In this sense, let us put a National Department of Transport here in the estimate and say that the National Department is the Yinle. Yeah, it is the engine of the locomotive. Then, ama wagons ke ila ama province, ama district, ama local municipalities are the wagons. Now, you can't have a train that can only plan that this is where we will go in terms of policy and everything. Then after you have done that, then you have the wagon that any wagon in Puma goes this side and the other wagon there goes this side and the other wagon goes that side. And then at the end of the financial year, you then again call the locomotive to come and then say, this is the distance that was traveled by this train. How possible is that if you can? You are not given the power to coordinate and drive. And there is no way that you can come up with a model of a country if you you don't have a coordination power and direct indlela izinto. So we feel good there is a need for that. But we are a bit disturbed, Gangani. As we talk about Uskola, Shofagalula to us is part of Uskola transport. The only issue that we are dealing with here is that we raised an issue saying we don't want to buy bicycles from somewhere else. We want to use that program to actually create jobs in South Africa. In September last year, the issue of policy development has taken 3 years, 8 months. That was September 2010. Policy development, Gascola Transport. Now, mind you, food, we don't have.
What we are beginning to see again, the train that is beginning to move, but there is no map that is guiding this train. And we need to say, they are the possibility of holding. So, having said that, we are not saying that there is no progress. This is very great improvement to what was presented to us last time. We can see the light, we can see that there is direction. But what we are saying then is that we still need to build up in terms of coordination, in terms of putting first things first. And we are here to also say, we are talking about improving access to food and clinics. And that is very, very important. The last thing, so now we are aware of this. There is unwillingness. My consultants that are working for Rama provinces, Nama officials in the provinces, to test and pilot new technology, particularly that those technologies and that would improve the environment, can't have a decision on low volume sales taken in 2003 and we see no movement of low volume sales of rural home infrastructure. The plant hires Lawa Makulu are forever regravel. Re-graveling. The amount of money that is spent on re-graveling is way beyond the money that government has spent. The new technology of stabilizing the gravel with a new technology and chemicals that make it possible we can not go back and re-gravel that road or maintain that road for at least 5 years. And the saving oils are now would then enable you to pin the lemon to carry uyego over the low volume filling, because as you continue to stabilize, you are making savings, and then you take that money. We are always at low volume filling, or you are putting even a mass street light and solar in the rural areas. But not about rural areas, about some companies, but when they can't. So it is those things that you would want to see happening. We will talk and make available to you the report of the oversight that we have been through before we come together to prepare for what will bring us under one roof so that we can begin to move from one direction. Thank you very much. I'll prepare the meeting.
You have a little bit of 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 a Thank you.